It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier. And, John, we got an old friend here from 97.5, The Fanatic, and NBC Sports Philadelphia, and your old co-host on the radio, Rick A. Vitalico.
Tom, what's up, guys? I'm shocked. You know what's funny? Yeah. I think we did this with Tommy Green, too.
Tommy Green, same
thing. I forgot that we haven't had him. We're going through, like, who should we get? And Ricky Vitalico is... on TV every day. He's on the radio every day. He's a great buddy of both of ours. I used to co-host a radio show with him, and we totally spaced on Ricky Bowe until...
It's only taken 4 years.
Yeah, let me just say thanks a lot, guys. Thanks a lot.
You're very forgettable.
Actually, that would be a good thing in my job.
We wanted to make sure you had enough stories for us to come on.
That's right. You got a boatload.
Stories galore.
Ricky just said my job. So I am fascinated. Thanks for coming down here. It's 9:30 on, what is it, Wednesday morning. You know, you just seem to be the guy who's all over the place. I am kind of fascinated with how you work the radio thing with the TV thing. Well, so how's that?
Let me start by this. NBC's done a nice job with that. Obviously, we're on TV with that from 2 to 6. We're simulcast on it. So when I have pre- and post-game shows to do, if they are running into each other, for instance, today is a day game, I'm only doing an hour and a half of radio. So they talk. Okay. It really has nothing to do with me. It's a lot of emails back and forth from Beasley Media over to NBC. And, you know, they give priority, obviously, to my pre- and post-game shows, and they give me that kind of luxury, I guess. But they also put a studio over at NBC. So you'll see me on the show, you know, wearing a T-shirt or a hoodie, and then 2 hours later, you'll see me in my dress shirt ready to go on the set with makeup on.
So they've done a nice job there, Rick.
You're
doing the radio show, but you're in a studio a lot of the times at NBC Sports.
It's actually
Philly,
just a
right?
glass office.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I mean, it is one of the things. Yeah, I got a little different background, but it still works.
Yeah.
I mean, so they've done a nice job of
it. Now, what do you like doing better, radio or TV? What is more fulfilling for you?
I don't know if there is a fulfillment. It's just one of those things where I you know me, I've always liked all different sports. So it's especially after baseball season's over, it's a different world for me. And I kind of like the new challenges. Here's the thing. I've been up front, and I watch more college basketball than I do pro basketball. So I guess that would be, if there is a weak point, it would be the Sixers for me. I love hockey, as you know, John, so that's an easy one for me, but our team stinks. So it makes it a little difficult to even get into them a lot.
Used to be a big Hartford Whalers.
But football, are you kidding me? That's just easy. I mean, to me, that's easy. That's taking 3 hours of your day on a Sunday afternoon and watching football. Who doesn't watch it anyways?
Right.
When it does get difficult is when the Phillies are playing at 1 and the Eagles are on at 1, and I'm, you know, one eye on each TV making sure, you know, I have everything down for that Monday. Mornings are tough in September.
You know enough about pro basketball to be dangerous, right? If you're having a guest on, you're not going to say,
the Sixers.
It's not that hard to do research either. Right. It's not that hard to look into statistics. I mean, to me, it's all about – to me, I'm not about a lot of numbers, but in basketball, you kind of have to be because those numbers do tell a story in basketball. In baseball, sometimes they don't. I mean, you look at a pitcher, especially a relief pitcher, and I'll get into this in a minute. Relief pitchers, I don't even look at ERAs anymore. What I try to do is take, their last 10 outings. How many of them were quality outings? If you're 5 or below, you're not doing your job. If you're 6 and above, I think you're starting to do your job. Obviously, if you're an 8 out of 10, you're really doing your job and you're a really good reliever. So I try to just I think that the stat of ERA should be taken completely off of relievers stats now.
How do you balance, you know, on TV purposes, post-game, pre-game, post-game, how do you balance being critical, right, of the team, but then knowing that you are a player yourself and knowing that, you know, the frustration and, and how hard this game is? You know what I mean? Balancing both sides where you're not trying to please the fans. You know, it's balancing the fans, the organization, the players, the respect. You know what I mean?
In all honesty, I'm not trying to please anybody. Right. I know that sounds a little weird, but I just kind of – the good thing about being pre and post is that I'm game to game. You could be my hero yesterday, but not today.
Right.
So, you know what? In the way I look at it, if the players could look in the mirror, I was a guy that could look in the mirror after a ball game. And you knew – John, you knew me. You knew me, Tom, that I would literally wait for the press to come in. I would air myself out, and they would have nothing to ask me. And these players nowadays are a little different in that sense. Right. They don't want to talk to the press. They don't want to do a lot of stuff. But it is what it is. If you could look yourself in the mirror, you know I'm just telling what happened on the field. I'm trying to paint a picture with a little feeling and emotion into it.
And what better place than Philadelphia to be that kind of guy, right, Ricky? I mean,
well, that's what the listeners want. The
you can't
want.
Fake it.
Yeah,
you
I'm not surviving if I'm doing this job in Kansas City.
No doubt. in terms of how about do you like the interaction with callers on the radio?
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes they get kind of personal at you, but I mean, you know what? That's just part of this whole area. Yeah, I mean, I think if you start to understand, which you guys do, you guys understand the fan base and you understand what callers are calling in and you understand that you're going to get ripped upon. And if you could take it, you got to have some thick skin.
Yeah.
I mean, because obviously every caller is not going to agree with you.
Have you ever had a time? Do you remember any stories or any time where a caller called in and you just absolutely thought he was an idiot? And
well,
you
some guy kept yelling at me for hitting bonds on purpose. And I was trying to explain to him, but he wouldn't let me get a word in edgewise that I was told to do it.
Right.
And because people think you
we're going to get into that at some point. So.
All right. People just think you run in from the bullpen and do it. Right. You know what I mean? It's not like that. I mean, there's sometimes calls involved. So, I mean, and sometimes you feel like you have, I guess, a relationship with your teammates that you have to do it. I mean, I would do some stuff on purpose that I, you know, if something chippy was going on in the game, I would do it myself. But you wouldn't know it. You never would have known it. I would just drill somebody and nobody would know.
Right.
Because I could get away with that.
Now, Tom, when we did a radio show together, Ricky and I did a radio show together for, man, I want to say it was like 15 years, right?
It was a long time.
A long time on WBCB. Merrill Reese is the GM.
15 years?
We used to actually give away questions on there.
Well, we never
that ended abruptly.
We never really had guests. It would just be Ricky and I talking for an hour. And so Ricky would yell at me. So it wouldn't be at the listeners. be yelling right, at right, me, right? right?
But it's a good thing you didn't bring on guests on that
But we
show.
Did bring in on a guest one time. Now, we also – We do it down the shore during the summertime, right? We did it from the beach of the Golden Inn.
Right? Yeah.
Remember that well.
Yep. Then we did Keenan's as well. We did decide to put one guy on. Again, you should if you're screening somebody on the phone, it's tough to see what they're doing. This guy was live, and he clearly had a drink on it, but he seemed okay. And he gets on there. Do you remember? And he sounded fine. Everything was going great. And then he mentioned Bobby and put an adjective.
Abreu.
And next thing you know, I don't think back then, it was a smaller station. They didn't have
the seven-second delay.
No. So next thing you know, we're like, all right, that's the end of our guests going forward.
And I think we were asking him a trivia question.
Right, we were asking a trivia question.
The answer was question. Bobby Abreu, though.
Bobby bleeping Abreu.
And he throws it in there, and we're like, oh, my gosh. So, yes, a lot of fun with Ricky Bo throughout the years.
There were some interesting venues.
Yeah, we would actually do it from the beach when it was the Golden Inn. Feet in the sand and 10 feet from people coming off the beach.
Yeah.
Right?
And then 10 feet from a tiki
bar. And there's the bar. I was going to say, the tiki bar is right there and the pool's right there.
Right.
So I'd
be, making this big point, right, getting into this deep philosophical issue about the team. And I say, what do you think, Ricky? He's like, huh? Oh, because he's staring at what's coming on.
I would get caught staring,
What a life. What a life.
I had just gotten divorced, so I was looking. There was no doubt.
Well, let's talk. Can we go through his life?
Because,
Ricky, I think you've got an absolutely fantastic. A lot of people
might. Because, you've co-host for 15 years, but you've never really delved into the background and the history of Ricky Bo.
And I want to – so let's get into that. So all the people, you see him all the time, you hear him all the time. you grew up in the Hartford area.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And you basically played obviously baseball, but what other sports did you play growing up?
Oh, everything. I mean, anything that you could get your hands on, I think we played. Obviously, like, hockey wasn't as organized when I was little, and it was tough. It was like 4 in the morning if right. you were playing hockey.
I did that later.
But I did a lot of skating. I tried playing hockey at one time. The timing wasn't good. So I kind of stuck to basketball, football, and baseball. And even through my junior year of high school, I was still playing basketball and baseball. So.
But it's interesting. You were more of a catcher, right?
I was a catcher. Oh, okay. We're going to this.
Well, go.
I'll start from Little League.
Well, talk about your high school your high school career. What I always ask this question, when did you think, and I guess you are a little different, but when did you think you actually had a chance to make a living playing a sport?
I was 16, and I went to a Major League Baseball scouting bureau
okay.
as a catcher. Now, mind you, I was 5'7", 150 pounds, soaking wet. So I got there, and it was at Beehive Field, if you remember Beehive. That's where the Red Sox used to have their double-A team. So middle of the summer, hot as can be. You know, you're waiting your chance to get behind the plate and do, like, pop times to second base. I get up there, boom, perfect throw to second base. Hold on. And the scouts are like, hold on. I'm like, hold on for what? I mean, I don't know what I just did. I broke the scouting bureau record from home to second.
Wow. How about that?
So what do you think they do?
Convert you to pitcher.
No, we have to do this again. So I'm like, really? So now all the scouts are around. Yeah. And now, mind you, there's like a bunch of players that I've played against that knew I had like a monster arm.
Yeah, yeah.
Do it again. I broke it again. Hmm. Literally two throws in a row, I broke the record down from home to second base. Actually, Dick Lawler, he was actually there that day. So what they do is they put you in a game. I go 3 for 4 in the game, throw out 2 base runners. Yeah. Everything's – have a Chicago White Sox scout come up to me and go, we're not kidding. We would sign you right now, 16 years old. I wasn't even supposed to be there.
Mm.
You had to be either a senior in high school or 18 years old.
Mm.
So that ended that situation, and I ended up having a really good junior year, all-state catcher junior year. I got an interesting picture that I got to show you guys. There were 12 players that made the All-State team. Myself's in it, Rico Bronya, Brad Ausmus, and I believe Jeff Bagwell are all in that picture.
Wow, how about that?
And it's pretty interesting because, you know, back then Connecticut wasn't exactly a hotbed for Major League Baseball players, but it ended up
turning
up.
Was Bagwell from that area?
I played against Jeff Bagwell since I was like 14.
I did not know.
I know Rico was.
But I actually homered off of Jeff.
Hmm,
yeah, and he was a pitcher shortstop, believe it or not.
And did you know Rico pretty well back then?
I did not. Rico was from like the western part of Connecticut, so we didn't play them a lot. I was more central Connecticut to the Long Island Sound area. So
yeah,
we
Rico
would play
went to a boarding school.
Yeah,
right?
I forgot where he went. Yeah, he was at Watertown High School.
Yeah, and then he went to like Taft or somewhere.
Yes, Taft.
I think it was. Taft? Okay.
And so we didn't play them. I mean, we never played them. But Jeff Bagwell was actually in my conference in high school. I went to South Catholic. He went to Xavier. So. We played each other at least twice a year there, plus in summer ball and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then you went to small college and transferred.
I went to Lakeland, Florida. I went to Florida Southern College. I was recruited to go there. And you know what? I would have stayed. I love the baseball life, but it was – I'm not kidding you down there. It was every day. Right. There was no, like, studying. They didn't care about studying.
Nah.
I mean, I was getting B's in my classes without going to class. So I probably should have just stayed.
Yeah.
Would have had a better GPA in the end. But I look at it this way. It was one of those situations where I learned a lot in a year that I was there. But that's where I also learned that having two positions was better than one.
So when did you make that switch from catcher to pitcher? Was it there?
I was doing a lot of bullpen stuff there.
Okay.
And it started in an odd way. It was like like, I redshirted, so we had, like, redshirt games, which you were not supposed to do, I don't think, at the time. But we would go in there, and, you know, we would throw, like, BP to
each other.
You're
doing a lot of things that you're not supposed to do, Ricky.
I've
two already.
Well,
I'm sure
there's
going to be more.
I started by throwing BP, and one of the coaches was like, you got to pitch.
Right.
And I was like, not yet. And it just turned out I ended up going to Central Connecticut the next year, and I was catching a midweek game. Now, midweek games, we didn't send our whole squad. we'd send like two pitchers. It was seven innings. So you think we'll get through this with two pitchers, no problem, blah, blah, blah. And it was Fairfield University, and one of my best friends on the team, Todd Martin, got hurt his elbow during the game, and I was catching. I was like, hell with this. We don't have a lot of pitchers. I'll pitch. We have three catchers with us.
And you had never pitched in a game before?
Not in college.
Right.
Not in college. So I went in. I struck out 12 in a row.
Wow.
With the bases loaded to start with. So
all key. I mean, did you have a little bit of a hook?
I had a curveball.
Okay, all right.
I had a curveball. But it was funny because I end up lo and behold, I end up starting pitching more. I end up starting one game. Northeastern was number 12 in the country at that point, and I went in and I threw a one-hitter against them.
Mm.
And so the Phillies at that point, well, at this point now scouts are starting to notice that I got a pretty good arm.
Right.
So my manager in college says I'm not signing. He said he's definitely coming back for his last year. So I was like, hell with that. I don't want to go back. I want to play professional. But that was a whole goal of mine.
Great.
So I go to the Greater Hartford Twilight League for summer ball.
Right.
I have an appointment to go to the Cape Cod League. So I'm going to the Cape Cod League to pitch. Which ironically would have been the same day that I ended up starting my minor league career. But anyways, I get a call from the Oakland A's. They want me to go up to Holy Cross College and throw for them. There's a good chance I get signed. So I was like, okay. And this was on a Thursday. I pitch on Saturday beforehand. Phillies call, Dick Lawler calls and says, can you pitch in 2 days? Ended up pitching in 2 days. I got signed out of a car. And then next thing I know, less than a week later, I'm the number two prospect on the Phillies pitching.
Wow. And so is Dick Lawler. That's why, because right. when I was reading, I didn't know that about your, you know, that you were kind of undrafted and you were in this amateur.
Dick Lawler was actually from South Windsor, Connecticut, which is where I was playing in the Greater Hartford Twilight League.
And it's funny because when you read about your life, they make it seem like you were a catcher in a beer league and you got signed up, but you were pitching. Right?
Well, I was catching three out of the four games a week.
Okay.
So it was kind of like.
True.
Yeah, I mean, but my ERA
makes for a better story, though.
My ERA was just a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just throwing fastballs and then, like, change-ups. I called it a splange. It's kind of a half change-up, half split. And I was striking everybody out, and I think I gave up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Two runs the whole year.
Yeah.
And no home runs. I've given up two runs. I was like 15-0 with like a point like .4.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
Right, can I interrupt real quick?
No.
You just said splunge, right?
Splange.
All right, so tell me, and we'll get back to this
story. You're going to the sweeper.
We're going to do a timeout.
There's no
such yes,
thing.
All of a sudden there's sweeper. There was a team, and I don't even know if I can say this word on a podcast, but between a slider and a cutter, a team put that up there on the board.
A slider.
A slider.
You
I'll
said
say
it. Right? Someone put it up there. So
it was up on the scoreboard.
Yeah,
I saw
was.
That.
Yep.
Right. So what? Now, these aren't new pitches. It's just,
they're not new pitches. It's just their way of trying to make the game more adaptable to people now.
Okay.
And I guess maybe even a little comedy in it. Because a sweeper's been a curveball for a long time. A sweeper to me is a slurve,
right.
which is in between a curveball and a slider. I don't know why they changed that to sweeper.
Hmm. Yeah.
Now, I could see a sweeper being called from a sidearmer like Toby Borland used to do.
Okay.
That
across,
to me would be a sweeper.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. More horizontal.
I don't know who they're all made up.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, the one pitch that's probably not made up is the fastball.
Right.
Everything else is made up.
Going back to your story, Dick Lawler, it's fascinating to me, especially when a guy is kind of off the radar a little bit and then a scout finds you or discovers you. Like, did you have a special relationship with him after you signed? Like, did you keep
– I did. I kept in touch with him, especially through the minor league system.
Okay.
And like, kind of when I got to the majors, he's like, well, now you're on your own type thing. I mean, and that's how it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't his only guy he signed, so it was –
Yeah, sure.
It was – I'm sure they get bonuses and stuff like that, when especially when a player like that gets to the major leagues. But it was one of those things where I knew him beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't even know he was a scout for the Phillies when he would come around. I thought he was just some guy that liked baseball and come watch baseball.
And did they always see it as a relief pitcher, Ricky?
Yeah, I was a little annoyed because as a starter, my first year in Martinsville was basically all about getting innings. So go and throw as many innings as you possibly can. And it was only a month. I mean, I only had a month to throw. They sent me to, instructional league in Florida.
Martinsville's classic.
Martinsville's best.
It was like a high school field.
It kind of sucks that there's no team there anymore.
Yeah.
It was a high school field.
It was.
It definitely was. I could tell you right now, the Riggs family lived in left field, and they used to have pig roast for the team.
Pig roast. There you go. I mean, that's how it was.
Did you live with somebody on the team?
I did. Joel McIntyre was his name.
And they had
we had a house to ourselves.
They hardly had any stands for fans to sit in. Like, you brought your own beach chair
and
to the game.
Yeah,
you
know? And the section they did have was all concrete. Yeah. There were no seats.
Yeah.
It was the locker room sucked. That league, the Appalachian League, those locker rooms were horrible.
All right, so where did you go from there?
Appalachian League. I got sent to Spartanburg at the end of that season. I had two starts in Spartanburg, and I had two no-hitters going into, the sixth inning in both of those games. I only ended up giving up, four hits in those two games.
Was Mel Roberts still the manager down
there? Mel Roberts was the manager. Yeah. I went from, Rolly DeArmas was in Martinsville. Then I got to there. It was Mel Roberts. Then, what was his name? French name. This stinks that I forgot his name.
It's all right.
Roy Matica. Okay. Wasn't French. Roy Matica.
Where was he? He was in...
When I went back the next year, I started in Spartanburg.
Okay.
So then you started in Spartanburg the next year and then went to...
Clearwater.
Right.
And then from Clearwater, I actually got sent up to play in the Scranton-Phillies game. And I played for the Phillies, so I knew something was happening.
Yeah.
I got up there. I threw in that game. I was throwing 95, 96 miles an hour, and they're like, you're going to Double A. So basically I went from that Scranton game down to Double A, and then everything kind of – once I got to Double A, they put me right in a closer's role, and it was like
– So when you got the call-up in 94
– I got the call-up in 93, and I was pissed.
You got the call-up in 93?
August 28th, 1993. I still have the plane ticket.
Did you get in?
They made a trade.
Wow.
I was supposed to come in and be put on the roster on the last day of August so I could be on the postseason roster. They brought in Don Paul.
That's right.
Yep.
So then your debut in 94, now that's interesting because that was my first year with the Phillies.
Yep.
That was Tom's first year as being the best friend of the Fanatics.
See, I almost beat you both friend. Here.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's been here for a while.
Almost beat you both here.
Right.
I've been around 5 years before that, but that was 94 was the first time I was the main best friend, like the bestest friend.
Well, he picks and chooses, doesn't he?
I know he does. What do you remember that debut, Ricky? July 29th, 1994.
I remember getting in the locker room. I had to come straight from the airport. Obviously, you're flying into Atlanta. You go straight from the airport to the ballpark. And I guess the one thing that I remember is, at Fulton County Stadium, the bullpen was on the left field line, hot as can be. I remember humid night. It was a baseball night. Like if you were to pick a night to start your career, it would have been that. Sold out, hazy. I could remember the crowd noise was above me. It was weird. Like I knew they were chopping me when I first came into the game with that whole this stands. I was like, why don't I hear it that much? And I remember people telling me, when you get there, look around before you throw a pitch. I'm looking around. I'm like, this is odd. This is like there's a bunch of cardboard cutouts. And wouldn't you know it, in 2020, we have cardboard cutouts. But that's what it felt like. And it felt like the noise was always above me. And that's one thing that a lot of guys, if you ask a lot of guys when they first step on the mound, they hear all those noises. I didn't hear it. It sounded like it was kind of there, like a murmur behind me.
You were locked in.
And do you remember who you faced?
David Justice. I struck him out, but they didn't call it a strikeout twice. He even told me the next day.
And then Fregosi was your manager.
Fregosi was my manager.
Right? I mean, what was your relationship with Jim?
He was like a father figure on the field for me. I mean, because he knew I was coming into a bunch of animals. And, he wanted to make sure that I was always positive or however you want to look at me, but he liked that I had that fire. I mean, if I give up a run, I was pissed.
Yeah, you were perfect for that team. Bunch of animals, John. Yep. I love it. You're perfect for that team.
So the one thing that I liked about Fregosi that probably wasn't great for my career was that when I would go into these games, if I gave up a run or if anybody didn't like the way I threw the night before, I was in the next day automatically, no matter what the score was. And it was good for my conscience, and it was good for my psyche, but I don't know how good it was for my shoulder.
Right.
You know what I mean? In the long run.
And you had Johnny Padres coming out there and going, Ricky Bo, doing a good job.
And you're great, Ricky.
Johnny just had nothing to say, basically just throw the daylights out of the ball.
Right.
That's what he wanted. Well, he wanted you to be that guy. He wanted you to go full bore every time you can. You're a reliever. That's what they expected of you. So I did. I mean, I gave every that. That's the one thing. I think that's why I'm somewhat appreciated around here, because I gave everything I had.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a nobody who got an opportunity, and I think the one thing that I always carried into Major League Baseball beyond major. You guys have known me forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a regular guy.
Yep.
And my mother used to say, "You were just given a talent. Don't let anybody tell you any different. Don't act like you're better." That's why I get annoyed at certain players. Like, even when I played, I got annoyed at certain players.
Right.
I don't like when somebody thinks they're better than an everyday person who works at the stadium, an everyday person who works at a restaurant. Why am I any better?
Yep.
Because I was given a God-given talent and my arm was good.
All right, 1996, right? A very special year because we have the All-Star mm-hmm. game here at the Vet. You're the representative for the Phils,
yep.
right? How cool is that to be the representative in the town where the All-Star game's held?
I was scared to death.
Were you?
I was. I mean, in a sense that I knew that I could do my job out on the mound. But, like, me being the only one, that means there's only one guy who could disappoint. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, that, I think, weighed on my mind more than anything else. And then my first batter was Pudge Rodriguez. When I struck him out, I said, all right, we're good.
Yeah,
we're
and
good.
Look who we nice. Faced. You got Pudge.
Pudge.
Right?
Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken's next.
Steroid Brady. And Jay Buhner.
That's not a bad
Brady Anderson, if you don't remember.
And you, I forget, what did you take care of them all? Or
No, there was somebody... an error on Caminiti, and it was kind of – it wasn't funny. Brady Anderson hit a little slap to third, and on that turf, it's a routine play.
Right.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah.
a two-hopper to him. Boom, clanked it.
And Ken Caminiti was a multi-year
– You should have heard his mouth when right, he was picking right? up. Ball. Had to be this inning. Had to be this inning. And he goes, as if they don't hate me enough here, and he flips me a ball. Wow. Like, oh,
and there was a little danger during the team photo, if I remember. The team
Cal Ripken.
Yeah. Tell
broke
that.
His nose.
Oh, I remember that. That's right.
Hernandez, right?
I totally remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like, felt was I think, was falling back and, like,
fell back, smacked him right in the nose.
I remember
so
that.
So I'm facing
wow.
Ripken. Now I'm thinking, just don't hit this guy.
Don't hit it, him
which
in the
is,
nose.
Which is kind of like a bad thought process to have
right.
on the mound.
Right.
Because if you think about it, your mind works. You guys golf?
Yeah, of course.
You think about the water,
yeah,
right. it's going in the water. So I'm like, just don't hit him. And the first one actually kind of rode in towards his hands. I'm like, all right.
And then you're breaking the streak.
Jeez. So, imagine that. Imagine breaking his hand.
By the way, speaking of golf, I've golfed many times with Ricky. Two things. One
the
is,
house.
One, well, hold on. Yeah. Well, one is we're on a course somewhere in South Jersey. It's down the shore. I forget which course. And
I think it was Avalon.
Ricky bombs it. I mean, he's lefty. Bombs it, right? Well, he bombs it, and it goes way into
over
the out of bounds, right? Way over the trees. So like, we're not
I'm trying to cut the right – you could go over the trees, so I figured I'm going to go over the trees.
Right.
Well, it went over the trees, and I thought just into yeah, the woods.
Like
oops.
Two holes later, some guy comes out.
Running out.
Running out.
Whose ball is this?
He knew Ricky had hit it?
Well, he's yelling at Ricky. Then all of a sudden he goes, wait a minute. It's Ricky Pitalico.
Yeah, it's like he didn't care.
Yeah, yeah.
I put a ball through his screen, and he was pissed. And all of a sudden, he finds out
hey,
it's me.
Ricky,
he's like,
oh, can you sign my ball? Yeah.
He may have asked me to sign that
I think
ball.
He did. The other one is we were playing in a tournament. Milt Thompson was on the other hole coming back, and Ricky was teeing off. And Milt was in the woods, and he had to make a phone call. So I guess he was trying to – but so he's in the woods to the right. We are probably about 150 yards down there. Just, again, minding his own business, behind a tree, making a phone call. Ricky Bo sends a drive that's a screaming line drive. It's going right for Milt.
Oh, no.
Milt's, like, just thank God, sees, like, the ball last second, and the phone goes flying. He's like, whoa.
Can you imagine that? Milt. And the worst part is, you know, Milt's one of the nicest guys you've ever
right.
He comes out with a big smile on his face.
Yeah, right,
I'm like, you got to be kidding me,
yeah.
Milt. Have you ever hit anybody on a golf course? I actually have.
I have. Yes, unfortunately, I have.
About sure 280 yards away, though, I hit a lady right in the foot.
Oh.
She was standing. She was literally like standing next to a tree, and the fairway went to the right, and I hit it right on the line.
Yeah,
and she walks out as the ball's in air.
Was she? Did it bang her up pretty good?
Yeah, she went down. Sack of potatoes.
Now the other one is one of my favorite stories of Ricky is that at the vet, the clubhouse is on the surface level.
There we go.
And our offices are on this, across the hallway,
yes.
Right? If you remember where we were. So Ricky at, let's say it's a 7 o'clock game. Ricky at 6 o'clock would be in his uniform, and he's got a lot of pent-up energy, yeah. Right? So Ricky would,
come through our office.
Sure.
and talk to everybody.
In full uniform, talk to everybody.
Kelly Juergen.
Yep. Or Lisa Mammonis at the time and other people.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I played ice hockey in the mornings as part of the 7-15ers club. At the Spectrum. So I can't believe I did this, but I used to bring my hockey bag and sticks.
It stunk.
And I somehow kept it in my cubicle, right? Ugh. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah,
remember those cubicles? They were gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe I left it. I'm going to say I left it over there, but I brought my sticks. No, I didn't do that. So anyway, Ricky would come over, would be, again, just have a lot of energy, and people are working. This is, an hour before the game. And Ricky would say, Brazier, grab a stick and get down there. And I'd have a Mylek ball, orange ball. I'd say, go down there and play goalie. So Ricky would down there again. Chrissy Long is over here. Kurt Funk, Dave Buck, we're all working, right?
Right.
And Ricky's firing at me, and I'm playing goalie. And then I said, "All right, let's switch it up. You play goalie." He's like, "All right." So I take a snapshot, yeah. Right? And I didn't mean it for it, but it rose faster than I thought, right? Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, Ricky gets alligator arms. He can't get out of the way, and it gets him.
Blames me. Notice how he's blaming me.
It was my fault. And next thing you know, it hits him right in the mouth, and his mouth starts bleeding all over his uniform.
All over the uniform.
And what does he say?
Frank's going to kill me.
Yeah. Frank Kochenbarger's our clubhouse guy who's in charge of the uniforms. He's like, Frank's going to kill me. Frank's going to kill me.
Man, I was young. I was like, uh-oh, do I even have another uniform? I don't know.
Well, Ricky's always been a man of the people. He'd come up after the games up to the press club and hang out with us, have some beers with Harry and the boys.
I'll never forget the after the Atlanta
9/11 game. First game 9/11. After 9/11.
It was actually really emotional being up there.
Wasn't that?
Harry was singing.
Remember, he had everyone hold hands.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we all sang God Bless America.
God Bless America. And then we started cursing out the Atlanta Braves.
Yes, all the pitching staff.
We hated those guys.
Yeah, we did. We had a good run that year for that team, 2001. We only ended up a game and a half out, I think, or a game out.
Yeah.
Maybe two. But
yeah, I mean, yeah.
We gave them a run for their money.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Run. 2001. You know what? I wrote that down because, Ricky, unfortunately, you were part of some pretty bad Phillies.
We were. That was the only shot we had. I was
2001.
You know what made me tick that year? The whole Dennis Cook and Turk Wendell. Not to take anything away from those two because they're really good pitchers.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did not have a good start to their Phillies.
And what year are you talking about?
It was 2001.
Because second place, 86 wins.
Cormier, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
Man, we were in the bullpen at Shea that night because if you remember, they just changed dressing rooms. They came over to our locker room. I remember sitting out in the bullpen. It was the eighth inning coming up. Me and Real both take our, our warm ups off, start, stretching out, getting ready to go on the mound. Phone rings, Wendell Cook. Real was not happy.
Yeah.
Woo. Screaming, that tunnel around Shea. That you could hear all the way down. Oh, he was screaming at Vern Rule. Screaming at him.
All right, you mentioned Barry Bonds. We got to get into that story.
Yeah.
Talk about that because you weren't expected to be pitching.
I wasn't supposed to pitch.
You weren't supposed to pitch that day. Tell the story about Barry Bonds and how you came onto the mound and what happened.
Well, I had just come off a elbow surgery.
Yep.
And my elbow was not healed. You've seen me. I went down for 30 days of rehab. I still wasn't ready. I was throwing 85, 86 miles an hour, and they had to bring me back up or else I guess I had to go on waivers, which wasn't going to happen at that point in my career. And it was a Saturday afternoon, August 3rd, 1998, I believe is exactly what it was. And the worst part was my parents were in the stands. My mother was here, and she did not like any little piece of what was about to happen. Jerry Spradlin gets up in the bullpen. There was a phone call that came down that said, you know, Bonds has got to get one. Okay. Jerry Spradlin gets up, warms up, and completely warms up.
Why did he have to get one?
He stole second base, and that he was going for the old 50-50, I believe.
Right, okay.
Stole second base in a 9-run game.
There it is.
So there you go. There's your answer. And, you know, he always had a cocky attitude. Everybody knows. But Jerry Spradlin was supposed to go in and hit him. So we get to the point where there's two outs in the inning. Jerry tells, I believe it was Ramon Henderson, maybe. I don't even know who. I think it was Ramon Henderson. Gets on the phone. He's not doing it. Phone rings again. Now, mind you, I have sneakers on. I have sneakers, no glove, no nothing.
And you can't fit in Jerry Spradlin's shoes because they're probably size 17.
So the phone rings back, and it's Francona on the phone with, I believe, somebody, and they hand me the phone. I'm like, yeah, I don't have spikes. I don't have my glove. I don't have anything. You know, they told me not to. Well, here comes Schilling down the golf cart, has my spikes, has my glove. I throw them on real quick.
Wow.
Mind you, they're stalling on the field because there's two outs in the inning. I throw one warm-up pitch in the bullpen, and that was it. That was it. I have to go in the game.
Yeah,
I'm not ready to throw a pitch. I end up coming in the ball game at the vet, jogging in. I actually heard Harry's call a couple weeks ago about this. And the funny part was like, well, Jerry Spradlin was warming up, and now it's Ricky Poe in the ballgame. So you could hear in his voice that he knew what was going to happen.
It's like sending Dave Schultz in after somebody cheap shot a guy. Well, here comes Schultzy.
Right. And Terry O'Reilly's up to bat.
Exactly. But the whole story just keeps getting worse and worse for me because, number one, in the paper that morning, and mind you, the papers were golden with that. Dr. Morton from Delaware had a statement. I pitched two innings the night before to try to stretch my arm out. And it said, Ricky is in no way going to pitch the next three games. So when it comes down to it, I'm buried when it comes down to like suspensions and everything.
Yeah, right. You're in for one pitch.
I'm in for one pitch. I throw one pitch to Mark Parent, and I'm waiting for the ball to come back. He throws it down to second base on the field. So I've only thrown two warm-up pitches at this point. Now, how accurate could that, like, now this is going through my head. Like, how accurate is this going to be?
Right.
So I'm like, I have to really get it way inside. And
well, let me ask you a question. Hold on. Before you get there.
I hadn't thrown a ball 90 miles an hour. This one was 94 off of his kneecap.
Wait, before you get there. Now, Barry Bonds is, I mean, you're not talking the Pittsburgh Pirates, Barry Bonds.
He was big.
You're talking a bigger, jacked up Barry
rather
Bonds.
Rather large.
Right. So is there a little intimidation in there?
I was told on the phone call in the bullpen, I do not want you swinging with your right arm. If there happens to be a brawl, we want you to either try to tackle and just get out of that or throw your glove at him. Well, here we go. Hits him in the kneecaps. Here he comes. I have my glove in my hand. I'm like, heck with that. Threw the glove away. Tried tackling him. But, man, I could tell you, we're at Citizens Bank Park. I'm looking at some brick walls. You might as well go try to tackle that.
Right. Yeah.
Was he screaming at you while he's...
No. I don't think he was actually mad at me.
Right.
I think he knew I was in there for a reason.
Right.
I think about this. He stepped to the plate and saw me warming up after seeing Spratt. Come on. You don't think... You know at the vet they have that glass that you can see right through.
Right.
You don't think they saw Spradlin warming up?
Right.
Come on. And then all of a sudden, I'm coming in the game. Dusty, I remember I came out of the pile after the scrum starts. I come out of the pile. I'm on the third base side. So I'm on their side.
Okay.
And Jeff Kent, like, literally picks me up by my shirt, slaps me on the butt, and says, get over there.
And what was your relationship with Bonds afterwards, at all, if
it
anything
was,
at all?
It was okay because my suspension was actually in San Francisco. So we had gone out, like, the next week. We go out to San Francisco. I'm missing the first two games of a four-game series. I've already missed two games on the other end. I had a four-game suspension. So the night I'm coming back, I come back for the last game. So I missed three of the games. I come back for the last game. In the old Candlestick, you have to walk past their dugout to get to your dugout. Bonds is there, and he, like, literally comes up and, like, grabs me from behind and picks me up with one arm.
Jeez.
I was 215.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
one arm.
Boy.
Yeah, the guy was pretty strong.
Yeah.
And he said, I know you had to do what you did.
There it is.
And I said, I appreciate that. And I said, I hope you know, if we're ever on the same team, I would do it again. I mean, that's just,
yep.
I was just like that. I was an eye for an eye guy.
Do you remember in the scrum was Mark Parent first guy in?
Mark third, Parent third man jumped. In? He actually jumped on Bonds' back.
Okay, yeah.
And so he's a it big
was.
Boy.
So that was another 280 pounds on top of me.
Right.
So the only thing I remember is my face got burnt on the turf, like literally burned because it was 100 degrees out. Turf was probably 140, 150, and I could smell my skin burning.
I love it. Mark Parent, you know what's the best story about Mark Parent? So Mark Parent is the reason why Roseanne Barr, right, that did the national anthem.
Yeah, national anthem.
Right? So Roseanne Barr, it was in San Diego. Mark Parent is the catcher, and Roseanne Barr – you know, small talk before the national anthem, and Mark Parent said, "How'd you get roped into this?" And Roseanne Barr says, "My agent talked me into this. I'm really nervous, to tell you the truth. It's not really what I do. And do you have any suggestions?" Right, this is the minute before she's going to sing the national anthem, and Mark said, "Well, just joking around, do what all the baseball players do. Just
grab your crotch,
right? Grab crotch and spit or something." So sure enough, she starts singing, and I guess she's so nervous.
Right at the end, she did it.
And I guess right, she did that because I guess Mark Parent was in her head, and next thing you know, it becomes a national controversy.
Imagine if they did that now.
Oh, hey, you know, we were saying some tough teams, Ricky. That's, you know, that's just
bad teams. You could say it.
I know. It was a bummer.
I do have one regret.
What was that?
I do have one regret, and it's your friend, your best friend.
Oh, we had a.
It was a fun little back and forth we used to do.
Yeah, it was because Ricky being in the bullpen, the Fanatic would leave the pregame after messing around on the field on his four wheeler and head up the truck ramp, and Ricky would always throw some. You know,
I would throw up a rosin bag. Never ever hit him.
Yeah, to
never.
See if it would land on the Fanatic. Well, this one particular day, Ricky's right in the middle of the truck ramp. The Fanatic's flying off the field, coming up the truck ramp, and Ricky throws a fastball at the Fanatic and hits the Fanatic right in the neck. And where's my face, John? That's right. Somehow the Fanatic got hit in the neck, and yes. I wound up not being able to see.
That's really.
Yeah. I felt so bad.
Science.
Well, because you do it every day, right. And you're like, "Oh, I'm never gonna hit him." And then I went, "Oh no, he's pissed."
I went back to the dressing room, and really, I couldn't see out of my one eye.
You were that
see.
Attached to the Fanatic.
That's how it happened.
Well,
we're so close.
What he felt.
So I was ticked. I was yelling. I was throwing stuff, and so. I go back down
with a hose.
There was a hose
in the game.
During the game, and sprayed Ricky with a hose during the game.
Hey, another one.
Oh,
so
man.
You actually saw Scott Rolen, who obviously got inducted into the Hall of Fame back in July. You saw him as a young player, right? And you saw him through. You were on his teammate for a while. Did you see Scott Rolen at that point? I mean, he was obviously second-round pick. Was people say he's one of the best third basemen ever.
100%.
Could you see him going to the Hall of Fame at that point? Have you looked into crystal ball?
You know what's funny? When you play, you don't look at players like these guys are Hall of Famers,
right.
Or he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, like after my career, I joke around and go, "Wow, I got a lot of Hall of Famers out." You know, I mean, but it was. I don't think you looked at him like that. I was like, this guy's. You knew he was special. I mean, I could bring up 10 plays in my career, and I was a closer that he made that you just stood on the field and were like,
no question.
Or just his routine plays, because how lucky was I at one point? I got to play with Scott Rolen at third, Jimmy Rollins at short, and Rico Brony at first.
Yeah.
Right. Ooh.
Yeah.
Think about where's the hole? Second base. And Desi Relaford or Marlon Anderson, they were not terrible.
Yeah.
So, I mean – the whole key on that team was if you got the ball on the ground, you were in good shape.
You know, with Scott, too, you forget it. He had back problems, too. And I think his offense, I think, probably took a hit there, and his defense maybe somehow. But, I mean, never saw it. But he struggled.
I think he has a label, and this is odd, like a little bit like Alec Bohm. Like, Bohm's so big, why isn't he hitting more home runs?
Mm.
I think Scott had that same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Scott Rolen was one of those oddities. I put him in an oddity with Ken Griffey Jr., because I used to watch, you know, we didn't play against the Mariners very much. The only time I saw Ken Griffey Jr. was at the Doubleday Field when we had to play that game in 94.
In Cooperstown.
And when I met him, I was like, oh, my God, this guy is humongous.
Yeah, specimen.
And, like, I would say if I didn't see Scott, like, in the locker room and stuff like that before he even stepped on a field, I would have said, my God, that guy is huge.
That linebacker.
But when you watch games on TV, he always put himself in that right. little squat when he was hitting.
Well, I mean, he was Mr. Basketball in Indiana, and he was going to go to Georgia to play hoops. So, obviously, he's a phenomenal athlete. Talk about, because I think, in my opinion, I think Scott is misread in this town, and I know he's going to be honored in a couple weeks here in the ballpark. But talk about Scott as a teammate, because a lot of people get the misperception of Scott. Again, maybe it's just me as a big fan of Scott, but I just think you were talking about earlier that you as yourself, you treat everybody the same. Mm-hmm. And I think Scott, same thing. Like the clubhouse guys, the trainers, the reporters, he had the same respect to everybody.
Scott's a good person. I think a lot of people are misled by that. I think the whole situation, not everybody has the heart to want to play in Philadelphia their whole career. I don't know what kind of contract they were offering Scott. I don't know if it was legit. I don't know. I just don't know. I never heard the whole details. I don't care. Scott played here as hard as he possibly can.
Yep.
And that's the one thing that I will say about him. I mean, he was on the field, and I will tell you right now, whether his back felt well or whether his back was hurting, you wouldn't know it when he was standing on that field. Mm. And to be quite honest with you, not so sure a lot of people, if they would have played on that turf field, would have wanted to stay here as an infielder, because you're beating your body up every single day. And what does that do? It takes years off of your career. You know what? He made decisions that his family wanted to make with him. I don't have a problem with that. Yep. I think the problem is the bobblehead day. Was it the bobblehead giveaway?
Well, he didn't start
Scott Rowland day.
But he doesn't control that.
That was Francona's call, right?
He doesn't control
but
that.
But who gets blamed for it?
Of course.
Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what happened. Scott got blamed for. Trust me, I do radio. I hear it all the time about Scott Rowland. I don't care about that day. Right. I mean, I understand what happened that day. It's unfortunate. It wasn't his fault. People don't understand that the manager makes out the cards.
How much different – when you came back in 2001, how much different was it having Bo as your manager versus having Francona, who, you know, obviously was cutting his teeth with the young team when he was here. But then, you know, you bring in Boa, I think we were expected to win at that point, right?
Yeah, Francona had no control.
Right.
I mean, to be honest with you, you want to talk about the inmates running the asylum? We were running the asylum. And I almost felt – not bad for him, but you almost feel like, wow, overmatched early on in his career. This is not going to be an easy thing, because he had a mix of veterans and younger guys. I mean, really young guys, if you really think about it. And I don't know how he was going to get over that hump. And he ended up doing it with the Red Sox, because he went with a bunch of veterans and more or less felt his way through that whole thing. And then he turned into a really great manager. So, I mean, there's no – I just think that was the wrong place, wrong time. And then Larry Boa comes in, and Boa wanted complete control of the clubhouse. So, but I didn't have a problem. In all honesty, I had a problem with Francona, because I think I was overused, abused, because we were short on bullpen guys, which I don't know if I should have blamed Francona for that. You know, there's other people that could have been blamed for that, and I didn't do that. But when Larry came in, I think the one thing that I was clear about is I knew Larry. I came up, and Larry was here. I felt comfortable with him. He understood me. He knew I had fire like he did, so it was kind of like a good type marriage in that sense. And I knew he was going to give me the ball. So, you know, being in the bullpen, I hate to say this, I don't give a crap who the manager is. If that phone's ringing and my name comes up, I'm good.
Yeah, it makes
which
sense.
Is why we started getting myself and Real at the time after the trade deadline started getting a little, you know, ticked off, to say the least.
All right, let's – and before you have a quiz, by the way, I didn't mention that to you.
No.
But there's an 8-question quiz.
What
Tom,
if I fail?
You're not going to fail. Right. Because you're Ricky Pitalico. What is? Before we get to that, though, we have less than 4 weeks left in the regular season. Yep. We are leading the wild card standings right now. You know, we've got a favorable schedule towards the end, but we've got some tough games. We have 7 games against the Braves as well.
Yeah.
What do you think right now? Going in again, we're talking Wednesday. What's today's date, just so people have it? Wednesday, September 6th. What are your feelings about the team, and how are we looking?
I've said this, and I'm going to stick to this, that I want them to wrap it up or be close to wrapping it up the number one wild card on September 24th, which is a Sunday.
Sunday, Fan Appreciation Day.
It's the Sunday right before they go away for their last road trip. That Monday is an off day.
Pirates,
I want them to be able to set the rotation because I think it's important for the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you could set your rotation, and let's face it, I think the rotation is going to be Wheeler, Nola, and probably Taiwan Walker right now. I don't know if that's going to change. And the good thing about that is, if you sweep it in two, then you at least have, you know, Taiwan Walker to go game one in the divisional.
Okay. Mm. Good.
September 24th.
It's been a fun team. It has been a fun team. Been a little bit of a roller coaster.
This team could hit the daylights out of the baseball.
Yes, I would have to scare – I would think that if you're the Braves or the Dodgers or, you know, anybody.
You never hear me say this, but my favorite in a long, long time around here is Kyle Schwarber. And I know he's only hitting 193, but
he's awesome.
You have to appreciate how quick his hands are.
Yeah. Oh my God! When he hits bombs,
it's unbelievable. And his load up, it's so odd because he'll sit there like he doesn't care,
right?
And then all of a sudden you see that little twist back, and you're like, oh boy, here it comes.
Unloads.
And it's just so, I don't know, like. In my eyes, that's the wiffle ball swing that I always wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
And not just that, but he's the glue guy. I mean, we have a lot of glue guys down there.
No doubt.
But he's one of the big glue guys.
Well, he's been through everything. I mean, he was never the star of stars, but he's been through everything. World Series teams and this and that. So.
And just talk about a good guy, just blue collar.
You know what? I want to have a 12-pack with him.
Yeah.
Not a beer. He's not a beer. That's a 12-pack.
No, it's a 12-pack. And, well, yeah, I just love the way he plays. I mean.
And it's hard to love guys nowadays because what you're loving is their advertisement. You know what I mean? Like because of social media and everything.
Their brand, right.
You're being told their brand. Thank you. That's what, like Bryce Harper is like completely branded with
God bless him, that may have been
the smartest move I've ever seen.
Bryce Harper.
The signing of Bryce Harper is fantastic. Okay. I think he's one of the best players to ever come in here. There's no doubt about that.
And I think he's a free agent that fits Philadelphia.
Tagging himself with the Philly Fanatic right away.
Right.
May have been the smartest thing he ever could have done.
Who doesn't like the Philly Fanatic?
Exactly. And I don't think it was too contrived. People say, oh, he's pandering, you know, when he says things about, you know, he's kissing his Phillies logo. I mean, he really believes it.
He
said it from the beginning. My kid's going to be a Philadelphia sports fan, you know, grow up in Philly.
That was the best line. You know?
Yeah.
That line just, when he said, he said I didn't want a no trade clause in there. Or I wanted to waive the no trade clause in there because I want to retire as a Philly. But then when he said that I want my kids to grow up to be Phillies, you know, Philadelphians, to me as a Philadelphian, that was, you never heard that from an athlete before.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
And you knew where he was coming from when he said that. Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I mean, a lot of these guys though come in and they kind of want to hide. I think that's the worst thing to do in the city.
Yeah. And to me,
I mean, Trey Turner doesn't really say much, but the fans picked him up.
We have so many guys. The litmus test for me is are you going to go away from your TV and grab a beer, go to the bathroom, something, you know, or are you going to watch them at bat? And we have a lot of those guys. Kyle Schwarber's number one. Like, you don't go anywhere.
No.
You know,
obviously Harper, too.
And by the way, for those of you, I think you guys both do believe in this. The baseball gods, do you believe in the baseball gods?
Of course.
You know why Trey Turner struggled? I want you to think about that for a minute. You could ask me the questions, and I'll give you the answer after that.
All right, I'll think about it while he's asking me. But I have one last thing, John, before you start the quiz. I forgot. I remember when you got traded to St. Louis,
Ricky. I was disappointed.
Stunk. And then, you know, when I was looking up, I forgot. I was looking up. Oh gosh, that's right. You played for Kansas City, Arizona.
The Mets. The Mets.
How in God's name could you ever go and play for the Mets? You, Ricky, I can't believe you. What, dollars? What? You sold out?
I was
out?
At the end of my career. I didn't have a lot of teams to jump to. I think it was Lisa, more or less, at the end of my career, like somewhere near home.
Wait, Ricky,
still, all these excuses.
You got to throw it back to Tom and say, well, what happens if you were at the end of your career and your only option was to be the best friend of Mr. Matt?
Yeah, then what?
No. What do you think, John? You really think I'd take that?
Yes.
Oh, please. I don't care how much do-re-may they were
talking about. You say that now.
I just, in all honesty, I just wanted to keep playing, and that may have been my only way.
Whatever.
As a matter of fact, I was released at the beginning of that season.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right.
Good.
Are you ready for the quiz?
I guess.
Fired up for the quiz?
I guess.
And then we'll find out your theory on Trey Turner. All right.
It's about the baseball gods.
8 questions, multiple choice. You have to get 6.
Yep.
And if you
have to get 6.
You have to get 6. Because if
we throw you right out the window.
Throw you right out the window. I will get you. You know what? Actually,
you don't get the elevator.
We have a special backstage Burgoyne and Brazier T-shirt.
Oh, really?
I got to see if I. You're probably an extra large, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
I think I got one down there. So.
And I'm tan. Look, I'm finally tan.
Look at you.
Just got back from North Carolina.
First question: were you Outer Banks?
No, I was in North Topsail.
Gotcha. Okay.
A little golfing down there.
We had a little storm come through, so the golf course wasn't exactly.
All right,
but.
All right, first question. As we talked about, you grew up in Hartford area, right? Which one of these celebrities lived in Hartford? Never lived in Hartford. Author Mark Twain, Weird Al Yankovic, Katharine Hepburn, industrialist J.P. Morgan. So is it Mark Twain, Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al Yankovic is correct.
Katharine Hepburn used to have a house on in West Old Saybrook, Connecticut, that looked over the ocean. It was looked over the Long Island Sound. It was beautiful.
And then J.P. Morgan just.
I don't know.
He's a tycoon.
Mark Twain has his house up there.
In Hartford.
Right. All right. 1997 was the last year of the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah.
I know you're a huge Hartford Whalers fan. Which was not on that team? Which one of these guys was not on
the
that
97 team?
In 1997. Last year. You'll get him. Yeah. Brandon Shanahan, Ron Francis, Kevin Dineen,
Ron Francis.
Claude Lemieux.
Ron Francis was not on the 97 team.
Brandon Shanahan, Ron Francis.
I just said Ron
Kevin
Francis
Dineen,
was not
Claude
on that
Lemieux.
Team. I think you meant to put who was on that team, and it would have been Kevin Dineen.
Was not.
Uh-oh.
We're having problems.
Brendan Shanahan was traded.
But he was never on that team?
He was always on that team. Oh, was never. I thought you meant the 97 team.
Was not on that team.
Go over him again.
Shanahan, Francis, Dineen, Claude Lemieux.
Claude Lemieux.
I knew
he was.
He
was a Canadian.
Yeah,
you miss. Pronounce that.
All right. 2 for 2. You're good. You started out at Florida Southern College, which you mentioned. Which one of these former MLB players did not go to school there? Okay, Matt Joyce, Brett Tomko, Mark Fidrich, Rob Dibble.
One of Fidrich. Those guys.
Fidrich is correct. He's 3 for 3.
Nice, Rick. You're on a roll.
3 for 3. All right. You made your professional debut on July 29th, 1994, which you had already mentioned. Which one of these players did not play outfield in that game? Okay, this is going to be hard.
What the hell?
So 3 of these guys played in the field. 1 outfielder was not in the game.
Oh, man.
All right. Yep. Wes Chamberlain. Billy Hatcher, Lenny Dykstra, Pete Incaviglia. Wes Chamberlain.
Hatcher.
I threw you off there. Billy Hatcher was in the outfield. Wes Chamberlain was not.
That's impossible.
All right.
That's a tough one.
It gets better.
Are you really keeping score?
Yeah, of course.
Three for four.
Yeah, 3 for 4.
All right. You played in the 1996 All-Star Game in Philly.
Yeah.
How many Braves were on that roster?
Oh, my goodness.
Was it 3, 4, 5, or 6?
Let's go 5.
6.
Son of.
It was Fred McGriff, Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz, Wohlers, and Andrew Jones.
Wait, and you still accepted an invitation to play on that All-Star game?
You should have seen. I walked into the clubhouse. They're all playing cards all over the place.
Yeah.
And they're coaches.
But they're Braves. How could you even stand to be on the same team with a bunch of Braves?
All right,
you should have walked right back out there.
I was on the field by myself.
You have to sweep here. You need a sweeper. Right? You need a sweeper.
Why do I need a sweep?
Because you need to get 6, 7, 8 in order to win the backstage.
Yeah, you
got to
get the next 3.
This is easy. You'll get these. What was your career ERA?
3.99.
You don't even need multiple choice. Yep. You got it right. Where did your radio co-host on 97.5, Tyrone Johnson, where did he grow up?
Oh.
Did he grow up in Pensauken?
Yes, Pensauken.
Bam. He just needs one more.
Come on, Rick.
One more, and let's just see how well you know your other co-host.
Oh, no.
Michael Barkan.
Oh, God.
Where did Michael Barkan grow up? Hold on. Oyster Bay, Long Island, East Brunswick, New Jersey, Rumson, New Jersey, or Cold Spring Harbor, Long Island?
East Brunswick, New Jersey.
Bam! And he wins the T-shirt.
Michael will be so happy. By the
for
way,
the, win.
The baseball gods.
Yes.
You ready?
Yep.
Do you guys have a guess as to why Trey Turner struggled?
He was a Dodger.
No. Nope. Has nothing to do with where he was.
I don't know. I don't
All right, think well, I'm going to throw this. I'm going to throw this at you, and you will know what happened at the press conference when he signed with the Phillies.
Was that passing Stowe? They put a jersey on him.
What happened?
I was there. I think.
What did happen?
He would not do something.
He would not put a hat on. He didn't put a hat on.
Would not put the Phillies lid on. So he paid his penance with the baseball gods.
He talked about that. He said, "I just had my hair done.
I have to go to dinner." You don't do that. You put the hat on. Wow. That's why he struggled early.
Rick, have you thrown that theory out there on radio or TV?
No. I don't think I have yet.
That's the first time your theory is being thrown out there.
Oh, well, there it is. You don't believe in baseball gods.
Now
I just proved it.
I think
it
you're
to
on to something.
There you go.
All right.
All right. We're wrapping this up, John.
Yep.
Ricky Bo, thanks for joining us,
pal.
Sorry it took 4 years, but we got you on. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.